means groupement d'intérêt scientifique, which is in practice a research consortium, an agreement between research institutions, CNRS, CEA, universities, par ici, École Polytechnique, Université Versailles-Saint-Quentin, an agency, ADEME, and to the support of two ministries, Ministry of Research and Ministry of Environment. We were created in 2007 to foster interdisciplinary research on climate change. So we are only focused on climate, but to help having more interdisciplinary, especially on impacts, but not necessarily only issues like adaptation or understanding of processes around climate. One important aspect is that we see at the France level, but also at the international level, is also to have a stronger involvement of social sciences and humanities. And I'm very pleased that this workshop is held with this focus on social sciences and humanities. And I see that also in the Joint Programming Initiative, which is an initiative that gathers different countries in Europe to coordinate research on climate. So as this meeting, as a climate scientist, I also see it as a climate scientist, and I participate to the IPCC assessment reports. And for us, so IPCC has really been organized, been set in 1988 with the idea to provide the most comprehensive view on the knowledge, what is the basis of the knowledge on climate change, on impacts, adaptation, on mitigation. And so this process of denial or controversies raised by climate skeptics, I mean, several words have been used on this, is quite puzzling for climate scientists. On one side, it questioned the reliability of climate scientists, which is not very easy to live with, but most importantly, it really gives a confusion, I mean, to the messages sent to society, and it may limit action on climate change. The phenomenon is global. It happens in many countries, and France has also its deniers. It was mostly active in 2009, 2010. We must say that we are a bit in a quiet moment. Maybe it's a good time to study the process, to better understand it, so that we are better prepared when it comes again. In France, the climate scientific community was particularly upset in 2010 by the fact that deniers are, most of them are scientists, but we are not experts in climate, and that give arguments that are not following scientific rules of peer review and in science. And it raised meetings organized at the Academy of Science. A book was supported by CNRS, so there were a set of actions to really better explain climate. So critics is not a problem per se, but if it is based on scientific arguments, one of the main issue, it's much more problematic when it is based on misunderstanding on our climate system. So that's how we see it on our side. But what I feel more and more, and I'm very pleased of this workshop, is that we need to understand the process. Whether this is just a normal process in social acceptance, maybe it's just one step that we have to accept and go and live with, and better understand to accept, how to handle it, how to behave. So we really need some keys to understand the process, and I hope that those 2 days may help provide some keys. I would like to thank my colleagues that have organized the meeting. Stéphane Écout, who will talk just after me, is really the main organizer, but also Hélène Guimot from Centre Coiré, and my colleague from GIS Climat, who is Chantal Pacteau. So I wish you a fruitful meeting, and I hope we will better understand after those 2 days the process. Thank you very much.
So thank you, Sylvie. I'm also very happy to welcome you all here, and I will have some words where I will try to explain the idea of the workshop and the aim of the conference. I'll try not to be too long, but I believe also because we have many different disciplines here, it deserves some explanation. At my knowledge, the conference is the third one that took part in last year's, at least partly in Paris. And the first one was organized in September 2010, and it was already a small part of a small team of researchers who are here today. So Hélène Guimot, Jean-Baptiste Combi, and myself. And it was already financed and supported by Gilles Climat, whom I thank very warmly also for today. And in this first conference that took place in September 2010, we focused on different countries. So we tried to look at how climate controversies and climate skepticism was represented in different countries, and we confronted in a comparative perspective. The second conference took place about a month later in Brussels and was supported by Sciences Po Paris, and there was a public viewing in Paris. And it took a kind of a broader take on the subject by combining a comparative angle also with an interest in different approaches to skepticism and denial. So this resulted in an article for our conference, in a book for the other one. So there's one question: why having this conference now, 2.5 years later, what is the point? Or to ask it slightly differently, what changed since 2010 that justifies to have a new conference? I'll give two answers to this question, and the first one was already mentioned by Sylvie. So I think 2001, 2010, the conferences took place in the midst of a heated debate in France, which was about the legitimacy and accuracy of climate change knowledge. We could say it was the hot phase of the French media controversy. And contrarily to the US-American context, something that our invitees have to know, the French media traditionally gave relatively little attention to climate skeptics, at least at the beginning of the years 2000. This changed somewhat at the end of the decade, as Sylvie just mentioned. So 2010 was especially in the French climate debate, and looking back at it with some distance might help to understand some of the processes that were at work. This is the first part of the answer. But the second part has to do, and I will spend the longer part of this introduction on the second point, has to do with the object of the conference, which is, I think that more than the other conferences, we wanted this one to focus on methods, to focus on approaches, to ask how do we approach this phenomenon, how do we approach controversies, denial, skepticism around climate change. This choice in itself deserves some explanation. I'll start with a proverb that I saw yesterday in a cafe and that I thought was funny. It went like this: theory is when we understand everything and nothing works. Practice is when everything works and we don't know why. We combine theory and practice. That's what the cafe says. Nothing works and we don't know why. Well, if we use this proverb to describe the climate debate, I figured it translates nicely the feeling of many that are involved in the climate change controversies and who are trying to make sense of the issue of denial and of its effects on public opinion and political action. So there are those who know, the scientists, but they're not in charge of practice, or to say differently, political action. There are then those who are in charge, politicians. They could act, but they don't understand, or they don't want to understand. They seem not wanting to understand. the urgency of the issue. And then there are those, we could say, who produce not knowing and who produce non-action, ignorance and inaction. Of course, this is somewhat perhaps far-fetched, but I think that by separating theory and practice, knowledge and action, we come up here with some of the central problems in the debate on climate skepticism today. We believe, the organizers, that climate change denial and controversies pose fundamental methodological questions that have to do with the relationship between knowledge and action, between science and politics. I'll make this clear using some details on my personal and disciplinary background. As most of you know, I have a double formation, which is political science on the one hand, and science and technology studies on the other hand. And these are two fields whose objects are closely related, but that have very different genealogies. When I decided first to study political science, I wanted to learn about more about, and I hope I did, political struggles, power relations, and the way societies organize themselves. When you study politics, your central objects are social groups, political parties, actor coalitions, and your primary analytical tools are interests, institutions, power structures. That is, of course, fascinating. But I soon grew somewhat dissatisfied with that set of notions because the political struggles I was very much interested in couldn't be easily treated with these categories alone. In fact, Germany at that time, where I studied, was the battlefield of a set of highly puzzling disputes from the viewpoint of a political scientist, in a nuclear debate, for example, or in a set of other environmental controversies. The battle is not only about opposing ideas about what a good society should look like and about conflicting interests, although of course they play a tremendous role, but it's also about appropriate ways to assess risks, about the impact of small doses of reactivity, about objective knowledge on the geological properties of salt mines, etc. To say it briefly, the battle is also about getting the facts straight. But this is not something a political scientist is used to investigate. It's not in his DNA. Durkheim wrote, for example, that sociology is about the study of social facts. Social facts. This is the classical distribution of work. The social scientist explains society, while the hard scientists investigate nature. But the notions of interests, social groups, power relations are utterly insufficient to understand controversies like the one around nuclear power, where conflicting interests meet conflicting knowledge. So, this led me to another field of study in Paris, during my master's, Science and Technology Studies, or STS. Now, STS scholars, what do they do? They study science. They study science as a social activity, or science in the making, and especially controversies. Instead of assuming, for example, that one party in a controversy is right and the other is wrong, they introduced a set of methodological tricks to get to grips with this complex object. One of these tricks, one of a whole set of tricks, methodologies, that is of special importance to me here is the principle of symmetry. It was introduced by David Bloor in the 70s, and this principle is part of what he called the strong program in the sociology of science. It is, as he said, methodologically relativistic, as it proposes to invoke the same kinds of reasons for successes or failures in scientific controversies. It thus refuses the dissymmetry of much of the history of science that tended to assume that discovering the truth needs no explanation, while the failure of those who proved to be wrong by history could be explained by social factors like interests or by psychology. The symmetry principle was extremely productive, analytically in the 1980s, in the emerging field of controversy studies. It is also a political tool, and this is where it gets interesting, as it permits to counter authoritative claims to objective knowledge, especially when they are invoked to justify socio-technical choices. In fact, when we look at many environmental controversies, we see that state, economic, and political authorities claim to act on the basis of scientific knowledge or expert consensus, while a handful of dissenting scientists point the dangers of a particular technology, of a substance, or an activity. This was, of course, the case, for example, in the early debate on nuclear energy. To make this long story short, its ability to provide analytical tools to better understand socio-technical controversies was one of the reasons why I was seduced and fascinated by STS. And this also fitted my political engagement, as STS seemed able to give voice to those who struggle to be heard in environmental debates. So what does this all have to do with climate change and denial? Well, when I did my research then in my PhD thesis on climate change in Germany and France, I figured climate change is radically different from most environmental debates that I had been interested in so far. In the climate debate, the alert came from scientists. They quickly built a highly sophisticated set of institutions to solidify their claims and provide expertise to the political process. And Sylvie just talked about the IPCC, which in fact is at the heart of this set of institutions. Today, there is little doubt about the basic facts that global warming is occurring, that human action is responsible for most part of it, and that if we don't change something quite radically, it will have potentially catastrophic effects. This situation means, nevertheless, a small number of scientists, backed up by public figures, think tanks, and different social groups, contest these claims. This situation then means that in climate change, the front lines are reversed in comparison with most other environmental controversies. And indeed, some of the climate skeptics or deniers see themselves as those sounding the alert against an orchestrated attempt to scientifically back up a dangerous political agenda. So for the social scientist that I am, this is a situation that is new and confusing, and that is at the same time extremely productive, because it urges us, I think, to rethink our analytical categories and refine our methods. I will illustrate this briefly, and this will be the end, with two notions that we use to analyze the climate debate. The first of these notions is denial. Many studies have shown that the successes of the environmental movement have led to an orchestrated counterattack of industry, free market, and conservative circles that concentrated more and more in undermining scientific evidence for environmental and other risks. This is true, not especially, but not only in the US. The groundbreaking book for Green Backlash from Andrew Rowell from 1996 is a particularly well-documented early example for such studies. Riley Dunlap, who will be here today, and his colleague Aaron McWright have contributed extensively to understanding how this denial machine, how they call it, works. In Merchants of Doubt, Naomi Oreskes and Eric Conway have collected further evidence and shown that the genealogy of this machine reaches from early health to contemporary environmental controversies. Riley has also coined the expression anti-reflexivity to characterize this activity, while Bruno Latour has suggested a new field of research, agnotology, the study of the manufacture of uncertainty. So denial not only refers to conscious negation of established fact, it also has a psychological meaning or color to it. In psychology, it designates an unconscious process of defense against an inconvenient or destabilizing situation. In the case of climate change, among many others, Cleve Hamilton or Carrie Norgaard have analyzed the mechanisms that help us to elude a reality that questions us too much. If we take the predictions of climate change scenarios seriously, they're indeed frightening. And taking action about climate change seriously endangers our lifestyles and consumption habits. So what I want to say is denial as a process is occurring. It is conceptually sound and academically productive as a term. But its frequent use is not unproblematic. Applied in undifferentiated fashion to all kinds of dissonant voices in the climate debate, it tends to level them and may prove an obstacle to more fine-grained understanding of these phenomena. Indeed, climate change is not a simple problem that will be solved. It is our condition, you could say, in this beginning 21st century, and it reshapes large parts of the scientific, media, political, and social agendas. Just as it is normal that there is uncertainty and controversy, it is normal that there are legitimate interrogations and parts of resistance. So subsuming them all under denial would mean to leapfrog into the past and reproduce the distinction between truth on the one hand and psychology and interests on the other. In Misunderstanding, an article from 1992, Brian Wynne presents a case study, an STS researcher, presents a case study on Cumbrian sheep farmers' responses to scientific advice about the restrictions introduced after the Chernobyl radioactive fallout. His analysis suggests that the authorities not only ignored existing lay knowledge that might have helped them to better understand the way radioactivity affected the region, they also utterly misunderstood the way local farmers reacted to the scientific and administrative communication around the consequences of the fallout. Wynne's analysis shows that public uptake of science depends primarily upon the trust and credibility public groups are prepared to invest in scientific institutions and representatives. In the case of climate change, the gap between abstract and global knowledge and the life worlds of people is at least as big as in the case of Wynne's Cumbrian sheep farmers. And after two decades of sanitary and environmental scandals, issues of institutional trust certainly may play a role in some of the resistances against climate change knowledge, especially when communication on climate change is tied to political measures, such as raising taxes, establishing carbon markets, or public campaigns for lifestyle changes. So much about denial. Second notion I wanted to address is controversy. Should we talk about controversies then when investigating the climate change debate? In fact, there's little doubt that there are all kinds of controversies around climate change, from the role of different types of clouds in the system, and you know them much better than I do probably, all types of different clouds in the climate system, to the accuracy of past temperature series, the extent of regional impacts of climate change, the appropriate mitigation measures to take, etc. This is also why we wanted this conference to address not only disputes about the reality and origins of climate change, but also controversies around adaptation. And we are happy to have a group of Sciences Po who will present their work, and also Johan Bastan from Marine Sciences for Society to present his work on the subject. But here again, the extensive use of controversy as a term might prove problematic. Cyril Lemieux, a French sociologist, defines controversies as disputes before a public of peers. In the sociology of science, we use the term socio-technical controversies and conceptualize them as controversies overflowing from the scientific to other arenas, like media, courts, or parliaments. Is this the case in the challenges to climate change as a social problem? Or isn't the specificity of these disputes exactly that they do not have their origin in corresponding scientific fields or disciplines? That they are, for a large part, about manufactured uncertainty. So, talking about controversies for these cases may also fail to capture the specificity of the climate, tobacco, or ozone debates. Olivier Godard, a French environmental economist active in the climate debate, not too long ago published a paper on French climate skepticism that spurred debate in the French STS community. In the paper, he accuses sociology of science and other social constructivists, as he calls them, of structural affinity with climate, with relativist climate denial. This is, of course, highly problematic. The main personalities questioning climate change as a social problem in France certainly do not adhere to relativistic principles. They are scientists, for most of them, claim on the contrary to defend the ideals of scientific method and objectivity. Godard nevertheless poses a real problem. The principle of symmetry of Bloor in its version 1.0, we could say, cannot be the guiding principle, I think, to analyze the climate debate. We cannot return to simple methodological relativism of the 1970s. This being said, the role of the social scientist cannot be limited to reinstigating boundaries between true and false, knowledge on the one hand, and interests and psychology on the other hand either. So this is exactly why I think that a conference like this one is necessary today. I hope it will help us to clarify some of the questions about how to analyze dissonant voices, controversies, skepticism, denial in the climate debate. We authors think and thought a dialogue between researchers working on these questions with social scientists working on different controversies and social problems is necessary. This is why the discussants today and tomorrow are not specialists in the climate debate. They come from STS, from political science, from history of science, and I hope their comments will bring new ideas to the debate. So I welcome them, and I welcome the speakers, and I welcome all of you to 2 days that I hope will be intense discussions.